We'll move to the oyster replenishment plan. Mr. Button. How you doing, Andrew?
Good, good. So this is a discussion that will be a request for the approval of the 2018 Oyster Replenishment Plan and the associated procurement procedures. So this is a graph that you've seen various versions over the years, and right now it's looking pretty good. It's a little background right now on where we are in the fishery, that as you can see there's been a pretty good increase over the last close to two decades there. We reached close to 300,000 bushels of public ground harvest in the 2014-15 season. There's been a slight little downtick recently. This is primarily due to natural recruitment events. There was a lower than average spat set in 2013 and 2014. The good news is that in 2015 and 2016, we saw increased spat sets throughout most of the Bay areas. There are some exceptions to that in some areas in the Pocomoke Sound primarily. The 2017 spat set throughout the Bay wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. It was sort of an average throughout most of the areas. So that's nothing too alarming about that. We're sort of in a stable point in the fishery there in terms of that. You all note that there is some variation in this year's replenishment plan in your eval there regarding dollar amounts. There's some a little bit of uncertainty on the good side of uncertainty about whether or not there'll be any funding increase this year that could potentially increase the size of the replenishment plan. So this is a little bit of a wish list, and if there isn't any substantial funding increases, not everything in this plan would be done, but most of it still would be. Really, what would adjust the amount is the amount of areas that would get replenishment, but we'll get into that here shortly.
Yeah, Mrs. Everett.
What amount increase would you assume this new plan is on? Like, how much more in dollars?
This plan would cover the maximum increase we asked for in terms of the shell planting there. So basically up to $3.5 million. But assuming that there's less, basically we would just sort of make portions of this plan do less of the shell planting is where primarily large portions of that go. And in terms of the restoration specific funding that is part of the request, that would sort of be in partnership with other folks and isn't necessarily addressed directly in this plan, those specific projects.
So let me back up here and explain things a little better for those of us that are not, what's the right word here, consumed by the legislative and budget process in Virginia. So there are, the House budget is approved and the Senate budget is approved. The House budget approves an additional $500,000 a year to oysters, of which $250,000, half of it would go for oyster replenishment, and the other half, $250,000, would go for restoration. That's in the House side. No?
I think I have a different understanding, but
okay. Then maybe I have some misinformation here based on what I've seen about the budget House sheets. Bottom line is the Senate approved budget has more money in it, but it's all at the moment here specifically addressed for restoration. The House version and the Senate version of the budgets will be reconciled sometime in the next 3 or 4 weeks. And then we'll know if we're going to get any additional money for oysters. The question will be how much, but there's no guarantee, but it is a hopeful sign to have both the House and the Senate approve more money for oysters.
And I take back my confused look. Yes, you are right, Mr. Bull, that it is $500,000 replenishment and restoration. I'm sorry, just
yep.
End of the day confusion. Yes.
I know that feeling so well. So it's a hopeful sign. There's no guarantee. Things with a budget can happen for no apparent reason in the middle of the night, and you never know exactly what happened.
Right.
But it's better to at least have a plan here where we may be able to take advantage of these additional resources. And that's where Mr. Button has been drafting this in the hopes of.
Yeah, this plan will cover the maximum amount, and then we can tailor it down as needed. So, yeah. So I know you've seen that first graph there a lot, but just sort of to kind of break out what we're talking about here, this is actually just the public side of that graph there. So you can see that peak of close to 300,000 bushels in the 14-15 season, and then just a gradual decrease, primarily driven by a lower spat recruitment to our 2016-27 numbers, which are right around 246,000 bushels of shell, or of market oysters. This is the private side of that broken out, and I'll just point out that you can see that it has consistently gone up there, but it is sort of there's a correlation between the private oyster harvest and the public oyster harvest. So they're separate, but they're linked. A large portion of the private fishery is still dependent on natural recruitment, which is, so that's why you sort of see them going up and down together. And a lot of the same participants participate in both fisheries. So if you notice in 2014 and 15 there, actually that was when the peak oyster harvest from the public ground came, and that actually may have been in part sort of a compensation from a slight dip that you actually saw in private oyster harvest. So they sort of balance each other out there. So we'll go on to the second page of your evaluation there. This is for James River seed transfer. So generally, the cost of benefit ratio for moving wild seed oysters is relatively low. We've done this program for a number of years now where we transport James River seed oysters to areas up in the Northern Neck area that are sort of limited by not frequent recruitment events. So they don't really get a natural spat set up there. If we don't move any seed oysters up there to the public grounds open to hand tong harvest, those areas they're not really very productive at all. In past years, we've sort of done ranges in that sort of around 10,000 bushels or less. There was some discussion at SMAC at the previous meeting on February 1st about decreasing the amount slightly this year because of sort of the cost nature of it being so much. And SMAC agreed to move 5,000 bushels this year to those areas. The money used for this would be the oyster resource user fee, which is paid by all the harvesters. It's that all-gear user fee that we discussed earlier. But that goes to do this portion of the program, and it's got support with a lot of the harvesters who would hand-tong in those areas up in the Northern Neck. So the proposed amount of seed movement this year would be 5,000 bushels and approximate cost of $10 a bushel to the tributaries up there. This is the standing stock of the James River where that seed is coming from. So as you can see, it took a little bit of a dip down there in the last patent tong survey in fall of 2017, but we're still in sort of long-term pretty good shape. So we also manage the seed fishery there, the quota system, and this would be part of that quota of 120,000 bushels of seed oysters there. So it's not going to affect the resource greatly moving these seed oysters up there, and would provide a benefit to the hand tongers in those areas. These are the areas that would be planted in the Namanai, probably these two areas. These are the last years we planted were in 2015. And a slight variation in this program is in previous years, these areas were immediately open to reharvest. So if they were planted in the summer of 2018, they would be scheduled to be open to harvest that fall of 2018. And there was some discussion, and at the request of SMAC, we sort of decided that if these areas were replanted this year, they would not be immediately open to reharvest in an attempt to sort of get more gain than you normally would. So the recommendation would be to sort of potentially start a little bit of a rotational planting strategy and a rotational harvest strategy for these areas by planting one area there this year with 5,000 bushels, followed by a second area the second year, and a third area the third year. And on that third area, you'd potentially come back to this area here after staff had evaluated it and seen if it's grown out and it's worth opening up to harvest. And that got SMAC approval there. These are the areas that would also be in that rotation potentially. That's the Yakamako areas here would be in that. This is the harvest map that you see right now of the Yakamako River. And then the Cone River would be the third tributary there that would eventually get into this three-year rotation. But we'd start with the Namanai this year. In the Great Wicomico and Piangatank, for a number of years, we've managed a seed program that allows private industry to harvest seed oysters. They have to sign up for an amount every year we send out. We put out a public notice, and interested parties are required to sign up for an amount of oysters if there's sort of multiple applicants or sort of assigned amounts proportionally. Staff oversees the replanting of 2 bushels of shell for each bushel of seed harvested. These areas have done very well in this program. This year, we're lowering the amount in the Piangatank slightly. Last year, it was 20,000 bushels. The spat set was down slightly there, so we're going to lower that amount this year to see if it sort of rebounds slightly. The Great Wicomico River, not everyone signed up for the full 10,000 bushels amount. That system seems to be pretty stable this year, so we're going to keep the amount at 10,000 bushels available for private industry to harvest, to be replaced with 2 bushels of seed for each bushel of shell oysters harvested. These are the standing stocks currently in the Piangatank. You can see that little dip down there. It's mainly recruitment driven, and we're just going to knock off that 3,000 bushels, just to give it a little bit more of a chance to recover there. Here's the Great Wicomico seed areas there, and you can see there's been some more ups and downs here, but we're still at pretty good levels compared to where we were last year, so that's why we're keeping that the same. The other side there is the Army Corps Engineer Sanctuary areas, and you can see that our seed harvest areas that we manage actively this way with this short seed harvest are doing as good or better than the pure sanctuary areas managed by the Army Corps there. So it's just sort of a good comparison that our seed program is working well compared to just a sanctuary area there. This really brings us to sort of the meat of the replenishment program here, and this is where the majority of the money would be going. These are the areas currently needing shell. It's close to 900 acres of shell right now, or 900 acres of ground that are in need of shell. On table one there, and part of your eval, is a list of all the areas. And all these areas are determined every fall by our fall patentong survey. And these are the areas that are either open to harvest and close to that 5 liter of shell per square meter threshold when we start targeting them reshell, or already below that. So, you know, if funding allows, we could get probably pretty close to all these areas shelled. If there needs to be some adjustment, we would probably lower some areas there in the James. That acreage would come down. The Mobjack and York Rivers had recently received a lot of shell, so we'd probably primarily be focusing on the Tangier-Pocomoke Sounds, the Great Wicomico areas that just recently had a new rotation adapted to the last harvest, over the last harvest season. So we'd shell the area that's now out of rotation just to keep things going there. The Rappahannock River areas would be the areas that would receive shell that were just open. There's always a lot of discussion at SMAC and with folks in the industry about house shell versus fossil shell versus dredge shell. And what we see in our fall patentong surveys is from year to year that really the factor that determines if you're getting spat and recruitment there isn't the house shell, the fossil shell, it's whether the spat are there. So you can see in these charts that some years the dredge shell, or fossil shell as it's called, actually outperformed house shells. And in other years, you can see that the house shells have outperformed dredge shells. So it's really, I mean, it might be one thing if you did it in an actual tank in a lab, but actually out there over, you know, hundreds of acres, it really matters that there is shell there. It doesn't so much matter as what type of shell is there. This is really sort of a good demonstration of that. This is one of my sort of good demonstration graphs here. This is actually the entire Rappahannock River, all areas combined in 2016 when they had a very strong recruitment year. And if you see on the bottom axis here, this is actually what we're measuring in terms of liters of shell per square meter. And you can kind of see right here at this 5 liter threshold, which is where we target shelling, that once you get it above that, that's when you start seeing higher spat sets. So here's that sort of 50 line where you're getting 50 spat per square meter. And once you get over that 10 liters, which is really ideally where we'd like to be, that's when you usually get into the territory of very good spat sets. This is everything throughout the whole Chesapeake Bay in 2016. It's not quite as clear here, but you can kind of see that really you don't start getting into those high spat sets until you're over that 5 liter threshold there. And you really get high there, you know, over 300 per square meter once you sort of get over that that 10 liter or 10 liter per square meter threshold. And that isn't to say that this doesn't work everywhere. This is part of the problem with the Pocomoke, is there's a fair amount of shell there, but for a number of factors, there just isn't the spat set there anymore. So you know that you won't get a spat set if you put shell there, but you definitely don't guarantee that you will if there's not. So if there's no shell, no spat set. If there is shell, you still have to have the spat in order to be productive. This is the lower James River standing stocks. They've come down slightly since 2016. Our fall survey shows they've come down a little bit, still in pretty good shape there. The Deep Rock Patentong area, which may come up later, the standing stocks there, it's one of the few areas that gets very little replenishment, but it's headed in the right direction, even with minimal replenishment activities there. So there's not a whole lot of shell planting there, but it's a different gear type there. It's the Patentong versus the hand scrape or the dredge. These are sort of a good demonstration of what happens during harvest. So you can see here that this is Area 1, and this year we actually surveyed it right after it was open to harvest. So you can see this large drop from 2016 to 2017. That's the harvest activity there. That's not to say that in a sanctuary where there wasn't, there's still this drop too, but that's primarily driven by the spat fall here, not just the harvest of live oysters. This is a map of the areas that we target for shell planting in the lower Rappahannock River. These are the areas that were just open to harvest, and any of the areas that are close to that 5 liters of shell threshold would be targeted for shell for shelling this year. Areas that are still doing well, sort of closer to that 8, 10, 12 liters per square meter, wouldn't get targeted for shell. Those are areas that still have large populations of live oysters. So when I refer to that sort of brown shell volume, that includes living oysters there in the top. So those are part of that substrate, that calculation there. This is Area 6 that was also open to harvest this year. And you can see this is actually a pre-harvest survey. So by the time we got up there, it hadn't yet been open to harvest, unlike Area 1, which opened up first. And you can see that's why those lines are sort of going up there, is these areas hadn't yet been harvested when we surveyed them. So that's a good thing. That means that that area is working. It's going up. It was open to harvest. You should just see that decline. And that's where we're going there. And those areas that fall below that threshold now would be reshelled, in particular the areas there that were open to harvest that were close to that 5 liter per meter squared threshold. This is the York River areas there that also got a little bit of an extension this year. This is before harvest, and you know they're doing all right there. They would get some shelling this year if there's some extra funds around for it, but it might not necessarily be targeted. It sort of increases your mobilization cost every time you go to a new system, a new tributary. So there's a relatively small areas here that are needing to shell, so if funding didn't allow, we probably wouldn't shell New York this year. This is Area 2. This is going to be out of rotation for a while, but it's come down a little bit, but it's probably wouldn't be targeted for shell this year again. We did shell these areas last year. This is where a large portion of the shelling would go this year. The area in the Tangier Sound and Pocomoke didn't receive any shell last year. These areas are getting pretty low there on your table. One there, you'll see that most of the areas in the Tangier Sound and Pocomoke are right at or below that 5 liter threshold, with a couple of exceptions there that are some of the more productive areas that were open this year. But a lot of the areas here are in need of shell. This is the area that was just open this year for harvest, so these numbers are going to come down considerably if we were to do a resurvey this year. But, you know, we're in all right shape there in Area 1, the area that was just open. This is most of the best rocks in Area 1 are in the Tangier Sound, and that's one of the areas that's been getting better spat sets than Area 2 here, which has larger areas in the Pocomoke Sound. So the areas in the Pocomoke Sound haven't been seeing the same recruitment recently. So these areas would get shell as well. These are the proposed shell planting areas here in the Tangier Sound. Up here, these are Hurley's, Fox's Island. This is sort of California thoroughfare. And then down here, this was the area that was opened up this year that was probably one of the more productive rocks, Johnson's Rock. And since we're going to be in the area, we'd probably go ahead and shell this area as it's been a very productive rock, and it was just open to 3 months of harvest, which is a pretty long dredge season. So we'd go ahead and shell this area there. In the Pocomoke Sound, these areas down here, a Nancock Rock would probably be getting shell. And the areas 9 and 10, which are, I'm sure you've heard lots about here at the commission, are the areas that are really in need of shell. And there was a decision made at various points not to shell these areas for a number of reasons. We'll get into other parts of the replenishment plan, but these are on our list for shelling this year, contingent upon some funding, because if we shell these areas and funding doesn't come through, then we're basically not shelling other areas that are in need. We've already sort of made the decision to, you know, target areas that are most in need of shell that we continuously replenish. These are the areas in the lower Great Wicomico. You might recall that this last harvest season, we split the Great Wicomico into a rotation. So the areas here in the upper portion were harvested this year, and the lower areas will come into rotation next year. So we'd try to, probably while we're over here, shell everything. And when we shell a harvest area that's scheduled to be open in all the harvest areas, we shell at a very light level. So it's usually that 1,000 bushels of shell or less, sort of depending on the density there of oysters. So it's just one oyster shell thick. So it's not actually thick enough to cover up any of the shell resource there. And when we do our patent tong survey, you can see that there's live oysters. All the difference is that there's now shell mixed in with those live oysters. That covers the shell portion of the replenishment plan. We'd be likely using a combination of dredge shell, house shell, and fossil shell for this portion of the program. It's basically whatever we can get for the largest amount at the cheapest price, area specific. So there's always discussion about we need to buy more house shell, we need to buy more dredge shell, and it really comes down to I'd like to buy as much shell as we can for the lowest possible price and plant as much shell as possible, and that basically the more shell the better, and that's where we go from there. But if there's not always enough house shell available, and there won't be enough house shell available to cover all the replenishment needs. So this year, for example, I think we've sent out letters to 37 shucking houses, and we've been told there's only 40,000 shells available for the replenishment plan this year. So that doesn't cover it. And probably within the whole state, maybe 300,000 bushels would be available, and that doesn't cover the needs of the program there. So that brings us into gets towards a little bit of the wish list there. You may recall that there was some worry about the fate of the shell dredge that we use for our replenishment program, and the good news is that it has been purchased. It's staying in Virginia. They're planning on still mining fossil shell, but that doesn't mean that one day that fossil shell resource isn't going to run out or something happens to the dredge. So as part of this year's plan, we'd like to continue what we've done in the past, which is some alternative substrate planting areas. We're going to go ahead and permit these areas, and dependent on funding, we will either do more or less of this, but it's basically a good thing to be good at. So the areas that we permit for, this would be just crushed granite, so it's relatively small size. You can plant it on harvest areas. We've done it successfully in some areas in the lower Rappahannock River that were actually open to harvest for the first time this year. So we want to go ahead and permit these sites to do this stone planting. And we probably only do a couple acres. These are great big blocks, probably close to 25, 30 acres each. But we probably only plant 5 acres or so in each site this year, possibly less, depending on funding, just to basically get good at it, see how it's working in these newer areas. So that we propose permitting sites in the lower James River. This is a Nansman Ridge. We'd select areas that didn't have large amounts of oyster resource, sort of that sandy mud mix, low density of oysters, so it works the best for stone planting there. This is an area in the lower Rappahannock adjacent to Butler's Hole. This is where we did a stone plant in 2015 that was open to harvest for the first time this year. So there's some other bottom that would be suitable there. There's another area, area two of the Rappahannock, and this is, a great big box, but we're not going to basically come here and spread crushed concrete or crushed gravel in this whole area. It would just be a small portion, but we'd like to go ahead and apply for a big permit in case, you know, one day we do have to go towards more alternative substrate. Basically, be prepared. These are areas in the Deep Rock Patentong area. There's already pretty good firm, hard bottom out there, but once again, we'd like to get good at planting crushed stone should we ever have to transition to that. So we go ahead and permit these areas and maybe do a small plant just to see how it works there and get some harvesters' input and feedback on that. I skipped the Eastern Shore there. I didn't mean to skip the Eastern Shore. I still live there in Exmoor. The seaside of the Eastern Shore, we have a long-going partnership with the Nature Conservancy over there for seaside oyster replenishment, and there's a similar amount of funding available this year. There might be some more general funds available for shell planting on the seaside. It supports primarily a hand harvest fishery over there. There's probably 30 to 50 harvesters who are pretty active in that fishery, split between there, and it's still an open public fishery, so it's there's no restrictions on the hand harvest on the seaside over there currently. So we'd like to keep that going, and actually for the first time last year, some TNC funding was actually used to replenish harvest areas as well as areas close to harvest. So it's sort of a good partnership that keeps shell planting going on the seaside and keeps the folks involved in that up and running there. So we propose to do that with TNC funds and potentially add some general funds to that effort as well. So this brings us really to more of a this is sort of very funding specific, this part of the program, and it's sort of broken down into parts. It's the Pocomoke Sound Virginia-Maryland line portion on the last page of your eval there. And what we propose doing is, at a minimum, part of the reason why Area 9 and 10 were requested not to plant came from Sachs Islanders, other people who were concerned that there was some cross-border poaching or just poaching in generally going on in these areas. So they weren't planted. And they have been opened up, Areas 9 and 10, a number of times by the commission for short harvest seasons, usually 2 weeks at the request of folks there in Sachs Island. And there's not a proven cause that opening up those areas has caused spat sets to decline through the rest of the sound. But the population of oysters, the density of shell in these areas is very low. And I'm always hesitant, and staff is always hesitant, to open up any areas to harvest without sort of committing to putting something back there, one mainly in the form of shell. But one thing that the upper Pocomoke is missing that other areas such as the Rappahannock, the York, the James River, is there aren't really any sort of intentionally built areas with alternative substrate or set-aside areas that have high population density of oysters, sanctuaries, and permanently closed areas. There's not the same infrastructure there where there's these populations, high-density breeding populations of oysters to produce spawn recruitment for shell planting that you do up there. So what the proposal would be this year is, at a minimum, to sort of address any of the concerns of cross-line activities, would be to hire a local waterman to dredge areas within, sort of on right here along this the Maryland-Virginia line, and sort of roughly a 200-foot strip. This is Area 10 there, and this is Area 9. Basically clean any shell and live oysters that are in this area, and at the minimum move this back away from the Virginia-Maryland border to sort of better parts of the bottom on Areas 9 and 10. Then if funding becomes available for it, and there's potentially some opportunities for other restoration partners to work on this with us, is what we'd propose doing and are going to submit permits to be able to do should funding come available, is to do some stone planting along these borders. So basically sort of small piles of large stone, no more than, 200 feet into Virginia along the border here, that would do prevent any sort of circling along the border, so you couldn't really circle a dredge there without it getting caught on stone. And then the real main purpose of that is that sort of gets you an insurance policy that you've planted some large alternative substrate there that isn't going to disappear. It can't be dredged and that shell can't disappear. So you have sort of a permanent population that can exist there of broodstock. So you have sort of an incentive to, one, open up these areas to harvest without worrying about permanently removing the broodstock that might repopulate the rest of the sound. Then you also have the added incentive of, if you do get a population established there and you reshell these areas, if funding allows, then you have these oysters in close proximity like you do in other areas in the Rappahannock where you sort of see our sanctuary rotation system, where those sanctuaries and rotation systems can then repopulate the areas that you shell. So it sort of is kind of a twofold purpose to do this dome planting along the border. So at the minimum, we'd like to remove the live oysters and shell there and put them on the best parts of 9 and 10. And at sort of the maximum of that, we'd like to plant alternative substrate, large stone. Potentially, there might be interest from other restoration folks to do some of the concrete structures that are poaching resistant there to sort of get that population up. And we'd be hesitant to go full force on that if there wasn't good sort of buy-in from the local Saxis Islanders there. And it seems like there's pretty good support for doing this as a way of getting 9 and 10 open and potentially discouraging any of that cross-border activity, as well as sort of getting you an insurance policy that the Pocomoke can keep that broodstock going and your shell replenishment efforts wouldn't be wasted there. That's pretty much that for the replenishment plan. And this version did get a unanimous Shellfish Management Advisory Committee approval there.
That would be unanimous.
And the staff recommendation, I guess, would be to approve the 2018 Oyster Replenishment Plan as well as the associated procurement procedures.
Mrs. Everett.
Do you think the new owners of the Fossil Dredge will continue at the same price point, or do you expect that to potentially rise?
I wouldn't be comfortable speculating on that. I'd hope that we would be similar price point there. It's the cost of replenishment do continuously go up. So,
Mr. Ballard.
It looked to me like you're calculating somewhere between $2,500 and $4,000 an acre for shell planting, and then the alternative substrates somewhere around $10,000 an acre. Is that correct? I had $40 a ton and 250 tons per acre for the alternative culture projects. And
right.
Then the shell on the previous page, between $2.50 to $4.50 a bushel and density of 1,000 bushels an acre.
Right.
So I guess my question is somewhere around double the price for the alternative substrates, a little more than that. But do you see any longer-term benefits with the alternative substrates, like they last longer than the fossilized shell or the house shell, whatever you...
Well, the alternative substrates usually, I mean, it's granite, so it lasts a much longer time there. So the concern of that is it's sort of sinking into the bottom or being carried off the best areas there. And with the house shell and fossil shell, both are sort of approximately that sort of 4 to 6 year range in terms of before they really start to dissolve. So you would get a longer term benefit from granite planting, generally speaking. It wouldn't disappear as quickly if it was planted carefully in areas where it wouldn't sink. So, and it is, you know, more expensive there. And part of the cost of this is a economy of scale. So if you scale up to the same level of shell planting, that cost would probably come down there. But this is sort of an estimate of the current cost at the small scale. Yep.
Okay. Do you foresee, a world where that alternative substrate price point might come down and we might actually convert to using that rather than fossilized shell, or do you think we're still very far apart from that kind of...
Well, that is what a lot of the other Gulf states, Florida and Louisiana and Texas, have gone to, is sort of large stone planting. So there's just, they don't have the same fossil shell mining rig, that same thing, and they've transitioned over to that. So basically, at some point in the future, the fossil shell is either going to become price prohibitive and it's going to come down, or, you know, it'll eventually run out, and we would have to transition to that unless, you know, some other shell resource became available. But I don't think that the house shell will ever be able to quite make up that. It's a possibility. I'm not ruling anything out, but it is likely that at some point in the future, 5, 20, 30 years from now, if the replenishment program is going to keep replenishing these areas and harvest doesn't change and all the other factors that go in it don't, that we'd have to transition over to alternative substrate. And if it does prove to be more successful, it's sort of something else you can do in terms of competition against the shell dredge.
Mrs. Everett.
Just an additional question on that. So is the cost for alternative substrate, is it mobilization of material itself? Because there are salvage opportunities for material, correct?
Right. It's the main cost is It's the higher you go up material-wise, but a large portion of the cost, at least up front for smaller amounts, is the mobilization costs. And with sort of the opportunity for reclaimed material, that does bring the cost down. So we basically seek to get good, clean material at the lowest price point that we could for the amount that we're doing. So there is reclaimed granite. There are some issues with reclaimed concrete in terms of other stuff mixed in with it. But crushed granite is usually the preferred alternative substrate. That's sort of a sure thing that you don't have to worry about there. But if the price point does come down, we basically seek to plant the most comparable material for the lowest price.
Just to understand this better, is granite considered, alternative substrate considered a possibility for replenishment or just for restoration? Because
For both, yeah.
Okay, so you can just remove the shell from the granite, and then what do you do with the granite?
In terms of if there's harvest activity.
Right.
If there's harvest activity, sort of the granite is kind of treated like shell without oysters on it, so it's sort of cold and returned to the bottom. So if you were harvesting on, I don't think it's been specifically spelled out in regulation that you can't fill up your baskets with rocks, but it's probably frowned upon. So so it basically would be treated similar to shell there. So you'd be required to cull off any of the granite onto the harvest bottom.
Other questions? Mr. Tack?
When you talk about that substrate you'll put at the Maryland Virginia line, how big of a rock is that you're talking about?
Recently the Army Corps in the Piankatank used A1 riprap, which is your sort of 10 to 12 inch size boulders, and that would probably be the minimum size stone that you'd really want to do to ensure that it wouldn't get pulled up and that would actually do what it wanted to do, which is sort of stay there permanently. It wouldn't be built up any higher than, 12 to 18 inches, so sort of in that kind of 12-inch range that the commission seems to be fairly comfortable with. So it would be fairly large-sized stone, and there would be an opportunity for other structures to be potentially put out there that would be permitted, reef structures and that sort of thing, potentially to be put out there.
And so the follow-up question, so in this area would be where we would suspect spat would set, and these would be the sort of the breeders for long term. This would be the area that they would be hosted, in other words.
Right, yeah. And there are alternative substrate plants in multiple areas. So there's some in the Piankatank, there's multiple in the Rappahannock of larger size, it might be one of the reasons why these areas are performing better right now than Area 9 and 10 is having that there.
Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Neal.
Who came up with this idea of putting this? He's not dumb, is he?
He's a very smart fellow.
That was some good thinking. All right. You amazed me again.
Yeah, it was a brilliant idea. I told you so at the time. At first, I thought you might need drug testing. All kidding aside, are there other questions from the commission? Thank you, sir. We need a motion here to accept the 2018 oyster replenishment plan and the associated procurement procedures.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Tankard and the second by Mr. Miner. Is there any discussions? Call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well.
Abstention.
Abstention by Mr. Ballard. So the motion passes 7-0-1. Thank you.